Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey, I'm Jake Brennan, and I want to tell you about Disgraceland, the award-winning music and true crime podcast that I host. Disgraceland tells the stories of musicians getting away with murder and behaving very badly. Fleetwood Mac, Nipsey Hussle, Cardi B, Ozzy Osbourne, Taylor Swift, Tupac, The Beatles, Amy Winehouse, Jay-Z, The Grateful Dead, and so many more. This is not the music history you've heard before. This is an uncensored, immersive look at the lives of musical icons as seen through the crimes they've committed or that have been perpetrated against them. Did Jerry Lee Lewis murder his fifth wife? What really happened to Sam Cooke in that seedy motel at 3 a.m.? And how did the Rolling Stones wind up sleeping with the First Lady? Wait, what? New episodes of Disgraceland drop every Tuesday with bonus episodes released on Mondays and Thursdays. So get in, buckle up, and join me in Disgraceland. Available right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Rock and roll.
There are things that will, you know, give you a hit single, you know. There are ways of doing it. But I'm not sure AI will come up with a Lonnie Holly. Lonnie is not a product of algorithm.
Algorithms is a product of his
own experience, and then him turning, it's the transformation of horror to beauty.
Hi, this is Lowell Tolhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
And this is Budgie, co-founder of The Creatures, drummer with The Slits, and Susie and the Banshees.
Welcome to Curious Creatures.
Life after punk.
You may think you know the territory, but we drew the map.
That's what you're saying drew you into the bands you liked, was their ability to make it safe enough together to allow the vocalist or the guitarist or together as a band a completely different personality to come out. They were able to do that.
I'll say with your band, you know, I think you used to say to the guitar player, don't sound like a guitar, you know, which is for a rock and roll band to lose the guitar is a pretty radical move, but it's a great challenge.
I remember when drum machines and beatbox drum machines, you know, we started to hear them, and you know, the Kraftwerk album, and I just I was just amazed that knowing it wasn't drumming as I'd been trying to do myself, but the beats that came from Trans-Europe Express and you know, those early albums, Radioactivity, whatever it might be, or they stuck with me, influenced my playing. There was a little kind of, oh, maybe I'll be redundant, you know, digital recording will take over and nobody will need a drummer. But you just give me two great examples, is the personality will no longer be there. The discussion won't be there, because drummers very rarely talk about the beat.
Right.
Talk about everything else. Like what time we're going down the pub, or where's my food.
Yeah.
But it's like breaking the ice. It's the conversation gel, you know, it's that as well. I mean, all we have to do, though, most of the time, is just, you know, slap a bass drum in time with some tempo so people can get going. And then we add beats to it.
Something that was really interesting, I think, that maybe some people won't realize, on this album, at least two of the singers that we had were drummers. So they came, you know, like James Murphy, Bobby Gillespie, you know, they started off as drummers. So therefore there's an understanding that happens naturally. And, you know, you and I, Budgie, yes, we talked about machines before, but I've realized that for both the Banshees and the Cure, when that stuff started to arise, and that rather than run away from it and stick that sticker, you know, on your, you know, suitcase that said drum machines have no souls or whatever, you know, that people would do, it's like we wanted to utilize that. To me, that was the bridge over to doing synths and keyboards, because I like the idea that you could make a different sound, you know, because like the Black Beauty snare I had was great, but it only really made one or two really distinctive sounds. You couldn't make a whole bunch of things. And I like the fact you could turn a knob and change something radically, you know. So
what was the other sticker, wasn't it? Home taping is killing music.
Killing music, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Of course it wasn't. It's home taping was making it possible.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that's the danger that, you know, the musician strike of 1942, the musicians went on strike in the United States for 2 years, which resulted in the jazz, bebop getting big, and doo-wop and stuff like that. But those things that the record industry pushes against,
home taping
is killing music, or even before then, playing songs on the radio would stop people from buying them. It just shows you a huge lack of understanding at the power of music, and more means more. You know, it's similar to when I had my first kid, I was overwhelmed with love, and then we were having a second one. And I thought, well, that's the most amount of love I can produce. You know, I've reached the ceiling of love. And then you have another kid and you develop more of it. And you think, oh, wow. And it's the same with music. So like streaming, that was supposed to kill music. It didn't. AI won't kill music. You know, there's fear around it. There's fear around all these new systems. But it will just produce more music. I mean, you know, we can say pop music now might be terrible. But when I was a kid, Joe Dolce, I think, kept Laurie Anderson's Oh Superman off the number one spot. And that was a pretty bad song. So there's always been that fight between great music and good food and a donut. You know, they have different purposes. I think AI and home taping is just another, you know, people want music. And I think increasingly people want characters. You know, the more AI produces sound-alikes, you know, whether it's, you know, like K-pop things, the more I want to hear somebody like Joanna Sternberg, you know, somebody with a unique point of view, unique voice. And I noticed that with kids, they're not rushing towards generic music. If anything, it's now people want points of view. And I'm not sure AI will provide that. I think it will give us a lot of great things, but it won't give us a point of view that's unique. And I think that's what people are generally drawn to, despite all efforts at moving our interest to the generic stuff. When something happens that it has a unique point of view, whether it's like a Christopher Nolan blockbuster, that's not a serialized movie. People like anomalies, and they like interesting things. So I don't think new technology will have any detrimental effect on any of us.
Yeah, it's another good reason to have children. I talked to my son and his friends, and they like all kinds of stuff, and they show me stuff that I probably wouldn't have found otherwise, and they don't want it to be generic. You know, why would they want to have something, you know, beige and the same thing, you know? And it's like they want to go out and explore just the same as we did. So I'm heartened by that, because, you know, no matter how, I mean, I could always remember Chris Parry, The Cure's manager, saying, I wish I had a machine I could program up and just put out hits, so I didn't have to deal with you bunch of, and, you know, insert whatever he called us for that particular, he's from New Zealand, so he had some florid expressions. And I realized, well, that's never going to happen. It's never going to happen.
Well, there are things that will, you know, give you a hit single, you know, there are ways of doing it. But I'm not sure AI will come up with a Lonnie Holly.
Sure.
Lonnie is not a product of algorithm.
Algorithms is a product of his
own experience, and then him turning, it's the transformation of horror to beauty. And, you know, that's most of the people we've worked with have done something similar, not to the extent that Lonnie has, but everyone has their own trauma and survival story and all these kind of things. and has turned it into something that's kind of extraordinary. And none of this is generatable with machines. But I mean, we have utilized it, and I love using the computer, and I love, you know, all that stuff. I use my iPad to make music. I also use cassettes and all the other stuff. But they're just tools.
AI is what the Hollywood writers and actors and...
Yeah.
That's bringing Hollywood to a standstill, right? You guys are there.
Right now, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You just reminded me, Joan, I'm thinking about it, that all the people that we have on this album, and Lonnie Holly is one of them, they all have that connection that they've had something traumatic or different in their life that has made them who they are and how they are. And I'm grateful to them for that, because they brought that into our record and recognized that that's what we had to show them and give them. And so it's just a great combination, and it's turned out immeasurably better than I could have ever. I mean, the best things always, you can't actually imagine what they're going to be, you know. You just have to do them.
I don't think you make a noise like Mark Bone's guitar from Idols without having some experience of something that's unusual.
No.
We all seem to be drawn to these people, and them drawn to us. You know, whether it's Isaac from Modest Mouse, they're all, I mean, what a voice. So they all have very unique points of view, and it's just really nice to have them all on this record and to have it so cohesive, which is great, because, you know, the danger of having a lot of guests is that now that's what I call music volume, whatever volume we're on, but it's I think everyone was sensitive enough to you guys to not come across as lead singers, you know. The goal was to refocus the light onto you both, and I think we did. Yeah.
How are we going to get all those people in one place?
Yes, one of the things that me and Budgie found from doing the podcast was that people, you know, other musicians that will talk to us more, you know, and be more open, because we're not journalists, and I think a lot of people on the record would engage musically with the conversation that was going on there, because they saw us, you know, in a different way than somebody saying, okay, here's a bunch of money, go and make a record with all these people. You know, it was like a completely different process. So therefore, much more open. And I think it turned out something spectacular, really, in the end, you know?
You're right. People would probably think, Banshees, Cure, we know what that record's going to sound like.
And they'd be wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no AI going on there.
No AI going on there, that's for sure.
Cue the music.
Yeah.
I'm mixing a song at the moment. I'm doing two things. I'm trying to finish off a song for you too, for the Sphere. And then I'm at the last quarter of a record with Les Amazons d'Afrique. And it's an extraordinary record. It's they're a group from West Africa. Actually, I think one of the singers is four singers or five singers in the band at the moment. I think it's five. One of them is from Nigeria, but the rest of West African, and this is their third record. So they are really amazing in that I made a record with Rakia Kone a couple of years ago, and Rakia was recording in Mali and Senegal, was sending me stuff, and I was working here in Topanga. And we're doing the same way with Les Amazons. I met them in Paris last year, and it was very nice meeting. So they send me some recordings, and I do stuff, and I send it back. And they are so open to these crazy ideas that I'm sending them. And I'm trying to be as radical as I can with it, and pushing each other further, and it's great. So I'm doing that. And another, you know, it's a thing you were saying about drummers being the singers in the record. I'm of the James Brown philosophy that everybody's a drummer. I think he used to berate his horn players, shouting at them, "What instrument do you play?" And some guy would go, "The trombone." He'd go, "No, you play drums." "What do you play?" "I play trumpet." "No, you don't. You play drums." So I think vocals are also drums. You know, it's where you hit it, where the groove is. So Les Amazon record is, you know, because I don't understand the language, I'm understanding groove and I'm understanding, you know, feel and all that. So we seem to be doing a good record. So that's my day.
I'm looking forward to, I'd love to work in a studio with a band, if you like, or should I say more, perhaps more like with the vocalist present. There's that kind of thing. I would say that one of the first things I was not told, but or maybe realized, was you can pick up a lot. You've said it about what's his name? He's not with us anymore. The associates, Billy McKenzie.
Yeah,
I think was it Billy who was auditioning keyboard players and said you got to watch what the feet are doing. That was for different reasons.
If they didn't have the right shoes on, it didn't matter how much they could play or how good they were. They weren't going to be in the associates.
That's right.
I went to see my daughter was in. She was in middle school. Got into Muse somehow, the band, and I went to see them. And you know, the show was a big theatrical show, but I caught sight of the singer's shoes, and I was just transfixed. I couldn't balance what he was doing and what he was trying to do at the show with his footwear. And I couldn't get into the show. I was just like, why are you wearing those shoes?
But Billy could understand that.
Make no sense.
It's the importance, not just of the shoes, but what the feet are up to, you see. That's what, as a drummer, I realized the feet will tell me a lot about what's going to come out of the mouth, you know. Even if I can be shut off if I've got no monitors or I can't even hear, but if I watch, I know where to be.
When I was playing with the African Malayan musicians last year, I didn't know where one was ever, just couldn't figure it out. So my whole thing was, can I see the guitar player's feet? And I had to have it aligned to his foot, because that would tell me all the time. And it's really strange when I'm trying to go, okay, that's not my one, and then trying to fall in step, go, okay, I'm just going to count, looking at his feet, and when he hits down, I'm going to say one, and then is he even counting to four? He might not even counting to four. It could be threes. What's going on? But I was just staring at his feet for the whole time, and it was giving me loads of information, mostly about how wrong I was, but it was vital.
I realized that playing with Leonard Eto, Japanese taiko drummer, and he did say to me, I don't know where your one is. I was playing yours. so obviously we both had a different idea of where the one should have been, and it didn't make any difference to the conversation that took place, you know, between the two drummers.
No, the only way I figured out how to communicate with the Malayans was I grabbed a kind of an idea, like a Steve Reichian idea. Just have your one, I'll have my one, and we'll have something that will act as some translating bot, which was a melodic motif that became a loop, and we could just jump in at any point. And we never agreed on one.
Slits cut album, it was, you know, we rehearsed a lot, at least 2 weeks for the album, and not once did anybody mention like time signature, you know. And that first track on the cut is 5/4. We never went, oh, this is a strange beat. That's just what we played.
Yeah,
and that's where the lines finished. In the vocal line finished there to come back to the one, and the bass line fitted.
It's funny, you know, you were saying about Billy McKenzie and shoes, and then the guy in Muse and shoes. Robert's no, well, yeah, he's had very distinctive shoes for many years, but one of his rules of thumb was like, he wasn't gonna, he would look at people and say, you know, like, especially in other bands, and he said, what happened to the mirror going below their waist, that they dressed like from the waist upwards, and everything from the waist down was like, had no concern about how they looked or how it, you know, mingled in with everything else. It was like, you know, did they forget to look at the mirror below the waist, you know, because it was, and he was quite right a lot of the time, you know. So
also with things of that period and mirrors, goth people never really looked at the back of their head.
Yeah,
a lot of the time. And I remember thinking, you look great from the front, the back is all flat, and
right, yeah,
you haven't done the back combing or the crimping.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta look at yourself in three dimensions, otherwise, yeah, things get all out of whack for sure.
I have to confess, I don't look at myself at all. And I'm lucky I'm married, because sometimes my wife is in this shit all over your face.
Right.
But I would happily go out without knowing what is going on with me.
Yes, that's why we have wives, to tell us that we've got a bit of something. Yeah, I had some, you know, my wisdom teeth out, and this bit here and my moustache is numb, you know, top lip of my lip, and I don't feel anything there very much, you know. So if I happen to eat something, you know, and a little bit comes out there, it could stay there all day and I'm never going to remember that it's there, you know.
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, well, thank you for being here. Without you, none of this would have been happening.
Oh, thank you. It's such a joy to be working with you and playing music together. I listened to the records today, and I was in the gym, drove to the gym, and then I ran. I don't usually run that far, but I set the I found the speed of We Got to Move with Isaac Brooke, which was 7 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And I ran for the whole time. I ran for a mile listening to it, and it was so fun. Yeah, anyway, so I listened to it and I thought, damn, that's a good record. It's a good record.
But you're absolutely right. It works in the gym, because I took it yesterday with me to the gym, and normally, you know, if I'm sitting on the elliptical or whatever, and that, it's boring as hell, you know. I don't care, they got the TV screens above. Yeah, after a while, you know, too many episodes of Judge Judy, you know, is more than enough. So I've got the headphones in now, and I'm you know, ellipting, or whatever they would call it, to our record, and that, I did a good half hour. I normally manage about 10 minutes before I'm bored. It was great. So it works.
I keep cycling way past the children's school gauge, you know.
Curious Creatures is created and presented by Lol Tolhurst and Butchie.
Producer, Joe Wong.
Producer and audio designer, Dan Didier.
Executive producer, Mark Cates.
Associate producer, Sophie Wild.
Digital marketing, Margie Taylor.
Art and logo design, Justin Thomas Kay.
Music production, Jackknife Lee.
Curious Creatures is on the web, and you can access us at www.curiouscreaturespodcast.com.
And you can reach us on Instagram and Facebook at Curious Creatures Official, Twitter at Cura Creatures.
To find more of the best music podcasts, visit doubleelvis.com or follow at doubleelvis on Instagram or at doubleelvis on Twitter.
Curious Creatures is a production of LXB LLC 2023.